So the if we were to give a title to this Teisho this morning, we would call it Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Working on Mu But Were Afraid to Ask. And I'm going to start by telling you about a dream I had last night. It's actually just before I woke up in the morning. And this is true, exactly as I tell it, as best I remember it. I traveled somewhere in my car, and I ended up parking on a field, and it must have been some kind of festival or a lot of people around, and all sorts of things were going on. And I left the car, closed it up, walked around, and then I went to look for my cell phone. And I reached in my pocket where it always is. It's always with me. I've always had it. It wasn't there. Where was it? So it's probably in another pocket. I'm searching, you know, patting myself. Couldn't find it. And then I said, wait a minute. Where did I put it last? Where was it when I last had it? And I thought carefully about it, and I said, oh, okay, I had it in my jacket. And I took off my jacket, and I put it in the trunk, and I closed the trunk. It's got to be in the trunk. So I went back to the car, unlocked the trunk, grabbed the jacket, very confident, reached in the inside pocket of the jacket, and it wasn't there. And all of a sudden, everything changed. It was like this sinking feeling, this deep disappointment. Oh my God, what happened to it? Where is it? My cell phone. I didn't know what to do. I just had a feeling of panic. So then I remembered, oh yeah, that's right, that's right. Let me have someone call it. So I went to my wife and I said, Sarah, I want you to dial my cell phone because I misplaced it. I know it's right here, but if you just call it, I'll hear it ring and I'll find it. So she dialed my cell phone number and I didn't hear anything ringing. Now I'm really desperate. No cell phone. Wasn't where I thought it was. Rang it. Couldn't hear it. It's lost. It's lost. So then I just said, please, just ring it again, ring it again. She called again. And then I heard this distant sound. Distant. I said, I think that's my cell phone ring. I said, do it again, do it again. All right, rang it again. Now I'm sort of searching, I'm homing in on it. I can hear it, it's in the distance. Now it's getting closer. It's getting closer, it's getting closer. Now it's really loud. Now I realize that it's in the pocket of this big guy. This big, mean-looking guy. I knew exactly where it was. And now I went and I had to get it. So I cajoled and I begged and I pleaded. I finally just grabbed it at risk of my life and ran with it in my hand. And then I woke up. So that's the dream. Now, this koan, mu, just to recite it, recite the case, it's the first one in the Mumon Khan. Master Mumon's name incorporates mu, and he named this collection of 48 koan the Mumon Khan, and that incorporates the word mu, and he made it the number one koan. So this obviously was very, very important to Mumon. And it's very simple. And it goes like this. A monk asked the master Joshu, does a dog have Buddha nature? Joshu answered, mu. Meaning, no. Has not, doesn't have. Another meaning of mu is nothingness, or nothing. The actual character of mu is, if you see it, you'll see a series of lines. It's actually four small vertical lines underlying another set of lines and These lines are vertical as well, and then two horizontal lines, and then a swoosh on the top. And actually what the symbol is a pile of straw on fire. Pile of straw on fire. So you know what's going to happen to this straw. It's going to be gone. That's the symbol. So how to grapple with this koan? How to grapple with it? Uman called it the gateless gate, all right? The Mu Mon Khan. Mon meaning gate, and Khan is barrier. So the gateless barrier, the barrier with no gate. You might say that the gate is no. This no gate barrier, no gate barrier. So how to work on this Khan? How to work on it? Well, I would say that there are two critical errors that we all make when we approach working on this koan. It's almost inevitable. These two errors will arise at one point or another. The first error is that it's a puzzle to be solved. It's an idea to be figured out. It's a koan. There's an answer to it. Let me see. Does the dog have Buddha nature? No. What does that mean? It's a puzzle. It's an idea. Now, the way that Mu used to be taught to students back when it became popular as a breakthrough koan was to let the students struggle with just that error for as long as it took. And the student would come in with an answer, and the master would say, no, that's not it, just ring the bell. Come back next time, different answer. More zazen, ring the bell. This would go on for a long time until finally the student was so frustrated, they realized that they can't get there that way. Now, modern teachers of Zen have decided that either students are not determined enough to stick with this kind of approach, where they're rebuked and rebuffed over and over and over again for a long period of time till they finally come upon it on their own how to work on Mu. So they basically now say to students, don't even start that way. Don't even try to figure it out. Just Mu. Just Mu. It's quite a compassionate approach to teaching this koan, because you're sparing someone a lot of time floundering. Maybe not wasted time, because in that process, the student burns up any notion that they can approach it that way. So what happens now is students right off the bat know that. It's just Mu. It's just this thought sound Mu. But the mind still tries to figure it out, because that's the nature of the human mind. That's how we've learned to use our minds, to make maps of the world and use the map to navigate, to get from point A to point B. So it's very, very natural that even when you are told it is not an idea, the mind will make it in some way, either very grossly or very subtly, into an idea, something to be figured out. Let's see, what does it mean? What's its meaning? How do I get there? What do I do? Okay, so this is this approach to Mu, and it can get very, very subtle. Very subtle. Trying to figure it out. So, I would say to you, Mu is not an idea. Now, if it's not an idea, what is it? What is it? Mu is basically like anything else. It's there. It has a particular form. It has a particular sound. It has a particular feeling. It has a particular appearance. It becomes a proxy for everything in the universe that has these characteristics. Everything that we can see, hear, feel, touch, smell, taste, or think about appears in some fashion, has some particular appearance. So what we do is we just take one of all these countless things and we just examine that one thing closely so we can go all the way down to the rock bottom and not get distracted by the countless myriad ways in which what appears to be outside of us appears. We'll just take one thing that appears to be outside of us and look into that very, very deeply. And what we pick, I mean, you could pick a rock or a tree. You could. You could just give a student a rock and say, what is this rock? What is the essence of this rock? I want to know what its substance is. Student says, oh, it's a certain type of crystal. It's called this. Ring the bell. Bang. Out. Can't come back later. Oh, I get it now. No. It's the crystal is made of these molecules. Ring the bell. Out. More zazen. Comes back. Oh, let's see. Oh, the molecules. They're made up of atoms. Bell rings. Atoms. They're made of electrons and subatomic. Ring the bell. Oh, okay, now I know. I broke it down to the tiniest thing. All of these subatomic parts, they're actually made up of tiny bits of vibrating string, the most basic substance in the universe. Ring the bell. Out. What is it made of? What is its substance? Now, you could do it with a rock, you could do it with a tree, you could do it with a situation. When you do it with something like mu, you skip over a lot of dividing lines because you can't even begin to conceive of this mu as outside you because your own mind has created it. Your own mind is making this thought sound. It's not out there like a rock. Even though I would say that when you grasp mu, you realize even a rock is not out there. Even an ocean liner is not out there. A mountain's not out there. We're talking about the world that has no dividing lines. This is the world of mu, the seamless world. So, while we're on this level of the discussion, I think I'll just read a wonderful koan here that I have read before on Tuesday night in Northampton, but I'm going to bring it up now. And it's actually apropos because of our dear teacher's passing. And this is actually from the Hekigan Roku. And once again, this is all pointing at this seamless world of mu. So this is koan number 18. And the title of it is The National Teacher's Seamless Monument. And it goes like this. Emperor Daiso asked the national teacher, who was on his deathbed, after 100 years, what will you need? Now this is that wonderful, very respectful, couched terminology that was popular in Zen circles in China at this time. To be very careful, not just in sort of a Chinese culture, not to be too direct, not to be too explicit. And for Zen, this is beautiful because these words become more like poetry. So after 100 years means after you die, after you are no longer with us. So his Emperor Daiso asked this national teacher, this Zen master, who is the teacher of the emperor, who happened now to be on his deathbed, after 100 years, when you are no longer with us, what will you need? That's another couch term. What will you need? What this really means is, how should we honor you? What kind of memorial service do you want? What kind of temple would you like me to build? But I can't ask you directly. I'll ask you in this very couched way. So the national teacher said, build a seamless monument for this old monk. The emperor said, please tell me, master, what the monument should look like. The national teacher was silent for a long time. Then he asked, "Do you understand?" Loaded question. The emperor actually gave the correct answer. He said, "No, I do not." The national teacher said, "I have a disciple to whom I have transmitted the teaching, Tungen, who is well versed in this matter. Please summon him and ask him about it." So after the national teacher passed on, the emperor summoned Tungen and asked him about it, told him his whole story. I said to him, "What will you need? What kind of honor would you like us to accord to you after you die?" And he said to me, "Build a seamless monument for this old monk." And I asked him what it should look like, and he just sat there, he didn't say anything. I don't know what this means. And then he told me, "After I die, go ask Tungen, so please tell me." So Tungen, again in this beautiful, couched way of communicating that doesn't create a solid picture for you, so you say, "Oh, I got it now, I see the map, okay, so thank you for the blueprint, I'll go and start digging out the basement of this monument." He answered with a poem, and this is the poem. And it is very difficult, and we'll go into it. So the poem goes, "South of Shou and north of Tan," these are two rivers in China, "south of Shou and north of Tan." And there's a comment by Secho, who is a compiler of this Hekigan Roku. He comments, "This soundless sound of one hand. In between there's gold sufficient to a nation." And Secho comments, "A rough-hewn staff. Beneath the shadowless tree, a community ferry boat." Secho adds, "Clear is the river, calm is the sea. No holy one in the emerald palace you see." And Secho's comment is, "All is finished." Now, this is a beautiful depiction of Mu, a depiction. And so anyway, this soundless sound of one hand, this south of Shou and north of Tan, south of Shou and north of Tan, south of the southernmost river and north of the northernmost river. This soundless sound of one hand. So this no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind. That which came before, that which Bankei, as I mentioned last night, I believe, said was birthless, birthless Buddha mind. Didn't start at a particular point in time. Sometimes I'll refer to it as the singularity before the Big Bang, before everything spread out and became visible. Remember, Mu, one of the meanings of Mu is nothingness. But this is dangerous, and it doesn't help really that much, although we'll go into how you can use this. Then he says, "In between there's gold sufficient to a nation." You can't just stay there. You can't just stay in this place of birthlessness, emptiness, nothingness. In between there is gold. And Secho comments, "A rough-hewn staff." This is Mu, in form. As books, as cars driving past, as pain in the knee, as problems in your mind, as food sitting in front of you, as biting into a peach. There's gold sufficient to a nation. Everything is this kind of gold. And he says, "Beneath a shadowless tree, a community ferry boat." So he's actually showing us now how to do this kind of work. Beneath a shadowless tree. Why is this tree shadowless? What does that mean? Shadowless tree. What's required for anything to cast a shadow? Something shining on it. What if something shines from within itself? There's no need for anything shining on it, and then it won't cast a shadow. Are you shining on the world? Is your mind shining on the world? Like a flashlight looking out, looking around, trying to find it. Where's my cell phone? Where is it? Shining around. Everything's casting shadows and it gets very confusing. Then he says, no Holy One in the Emerald Palace you see. No Holy One. Okay, I don't want to say anything about what that means. No Holy One in the Emerald Palace you see. There's no one there. No one at all. So when we start to work on Mu, it's very, very natural to approach it with the thinking mind and to make it a puzzle to be solved, to be figured out. This would be like in the dream where you start with the faith that I've always had my cell phone, I've always had my true nature, I've never been without it, but I can't find it. Where is it? So then you say, let's see, I'll retrace my steps. Okay, I put it in my jacket, the jacket went in the trunk, so if I go over to the trunk and I open it up, I'll find the jacket, I'll reach in the pocket. You see, the mind is already making a map, making a map. Now it would be a terrible mistake to say, oh, I know it's there, don't worry about it. You've made a map and you're relying on the map. You don't have that cell phone in your hand. You don't know that it's actually not even there. You made a map. We make a map of Mu. We have an idea of what it is, how we're going to get there. I just have to do this very intense Mu, 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 Mu. If I do it long enough, then I'll get it. We make a map. Or, oh, let's see, what is it now? The Mu. See, Mu means nothingness. Okay, you get it? This is this calculation. It's important. It's getting you somewhere. But at a certain point, you have to get your hand on the cell phone. Even ringing it, it's good, you're getting closer. The mind can help you approach it. You start to say, it's not this, it's not that. It's not in my jacket. It's not in the trunk. I can't hear the sound, I have to ring it again. You start to exclude things. You start to get more urgent. I know I have it, where is it? But you must put your hand on it. You must actually take possession of it. So this is that first error, is thinking that this is something to be figured out. Now the second error is also very critical and will block you more solidly than a brick wall a mile thick. That's the error that Mu is some kind of perfection. A perfected state, a perfect student. I did it perfectly. And you end up in a perfect heaven realm with perfect rainbows or absolute emptiness, nothing anywhere, blue sky everywhere, white light everywhere. This is a profound error. I found the cell phone, it had scratches on it and the screen was cracked in one corner. I thought I was going to get a brand new cell phone out of this. The important thing is not the way it looks, it's that it's in your hand. There's no separation there. Now, as long as you conceive of Mu as something perfect, you are standing outside as something imperfect. And all the things that are distracting you, all the things that are pulling you away, all the ways in which you think you fail, all the ways in which you feel you're incomplete, which is what I call the human condition, not unique to you. It is the human condition. It's the way the human mind works. Are going to keep you from it because you're going to keep looking for a perfect place, the perfect Zen student, the perfect state of mind. And you will miss it. Now, there are many koan in the Mumon Kan that point to this, and there's one that's really ideal for this kind of understanding. And a monk went to the great Zen master Umon, and he said, what is Buddha? And Umon answered him, Kanshiketsu! Umon knew that this student was, and there are many students like this, very reverent, wanted to understand this perfect, wonderful, just on the highest thing, the highest notch, and Umon too. Very much putting his teacher on a very high pedestal, perfected human being, absolutely no feelings, never distracted, never pulled away by something, never feeling an urge or having a doubt or anything like that. We paint this whole picture of the world we're not in, or the person we are not, including others, they don't have to be teachers, as somehow more perfect, better off, less deficient, less defective, whatever it might be. So he said, what is Buddha? What is this perfect, total enlightenment? And Umon answered, Kanshiketsu, dried shit stick. Now the Buddha talked about the three marks of existence, and now we'll define existence for the purpose of this discussion now as anything that appears, anything that takes any kind of form, that can be seen, heard, tasted, touched, thought about, perceived in any way. The Buddha said this has three marks, and incidentally this includes Mu. Mu is a thought sound. Remember, we're not treating Mu as some puzzle to be solved. It's not representing something else. It's not a stand-in for something else, that other thing being some perfect state. Remember now, we already went over this. Mu is Mu. This Mu. So what is the very first mark of anything that appears, including Mu? The first mark of existence is dukkha, which you could translate as incompleteness, imperfection. If you cling to an insistence upon your model, your map of perfection, then it's suffering. So dukkha has sprained ankles. Dukkha has migraine headaches. Dukkha has anxieties. All these things. And these are all the mark, one of the three marks of existence. So I sometimes say that if you really get this, you understand that your true nature, which you are never apart from for even one iota of a second, comes disguised as these things. When I say disguised, we have an image of this true nature as being perfect emptiness, absence of any incompleteness. The one thing I need to finally be completely fulfilled. So it's disguised by headache, pain in the knee, worry about a situation in your life, the rotten way someone's treating you, all the rest of it. There it is, but it's in disguise. Remember, one of the ways in which students build a mile-thick wall between them and Mu is to conceive of Mu as some kind of perfect condition, perfect state, perfect samadhi. Don't make that error. Now, the next mark of existence is impermanence, which means nothing ever lasts. Nothing ever, we could go further, stays the same. From one moment to the next, even if it appears to be the same, we're just not looking closely enough at it. We look at a table, we think the table isn't changing in any way, it's just there as a table. But if you really look very, very closely, that table is continually changing. And not only that, one moment you see the table and there's some other sound, another moment there's another sound. And that moment you saw the table already, now you're comparing the table to an idea in your mind. So the whole thing about table is a process that is continually changing. So the second mark of existence, which the Buddha called impermanence or anicca, means that it's all like a flowing river. So Mu is like a flowing river. Mu is not a stuck thing. A stuck thing is the idea of Mu. An idea doesn't change. And if it does, it becomes a different idea. We have a model of it in our mind. The model is a very stuck thing. The model is not the real world. It's just a model in your mind. The real world changes and flows. Mu is like a flowing river. This is how you practice Mu. So, if we go back to this koan that I read, he said, beneath the shadowless tree, a community ferry boat. And then Secho adds, clear as the river, calm as the sea. There's a deep centeredness there. But he uses the image of water, the river, this flowing thing. Clearly it's flowing, clearly. How does this help you? Because when you work on Mu, it's this Mu. This Mu. This Mu. Very close, very intimate. Not the idea, not the dead idea. It's this living, actual thought sound, moment by moment by moment. You watch it, you watch it, you watch it. It's like this, ring it again, I heard that sound. Ring it again, where's, hear the sound, hear it. Hear it, hear it, hear it, home in on it. The actual sound, where is it? Where is it? Not the idea, I put it in my trunk, it's in my pocket. That didn't get me to the cell phone. Now, what is the third mark of existence? The third mark of existence is anatta, or you could call it selflessness. Selflessness. Interesting. What a profound, this is the profound capper on the three marks. First, we talked about dukkha, incompleteness. What appears to be, because I held a map of perfection up to it, it appears to be imperfection. It appears to be suffering. It appears to be not the image I had of what this perfect Mu is. And remember, Mu is, in this context of discussion, quote, existence, that which appears. And when I look really closely at it and I realize I was looking in the wrong direction, I was trying to find something that isn't there, I was looking for horns on a rabbit, so to speak. When I finally looked at the real rabbit, I realized it's constantly flowing, constantly changing. It requires my moment-to-moment attentiveness, attention. And then finally, There are no dividing lines. This is the deep secret. Now, this is dangerous here. We're in dangerous territory. Dangerous because when I say that, it creates an idea. Like, what's a dividing line, and what would it be like to have no dividing line? Already, we're going wrong. Already, we're turning it back into a puzzle to be solved. No dividing lines. So, in this koan I read, one of the ways that he refers to this is this shadowless tree. Shadowless tree. There's a beautiful koan. The student asks the master, what is the indestructible Dharmakaya? Okay, Dharmakaya is the highest truth, the body of reality. What is the body of this highest reality? And he put it this way. He said, flowing mountain rivers are blue as indigo. Flowing mountain rivers are blue as indigo. Fragrant mountain flowers are like a golden brocade. What's this Dharmakaya? Blue as indigo, like a golden brocade. I didn't say when you finally reach a state of perfect samadhi, then all of a sudden this realization will break upon you. He didn't go into it that way. He just pointed directly at it. Directly. Now, when he said flowing mountain rivers are blue as indigo, is there any entity standing apart? Is there any shadow being cast? This shadowless tree. And then, to go even deeper into this, the very last line of his poem is, no holy one in the emerald palace you see. No holy one. I would go further. I'd say not no holy one, no one at all. There's no one there. No one there. Now, when working on Mu, to get down to this level, right, we're talking now about this third mark of existence. We have to get, and the word I'll use is intimate, very, very, very intimate. So Mu is not an idea, and Mu is not some perfected thing, state, etc. I will give you one hint. Mu is intimate, very intimate. We must get intimate with it. So we start with giving up a notion that there's some perfect place we're trying to get to, and obviously it's not here because I'm suffering like a bastard. And then we begin to pay attention to what is actually here. The actual Mu, this imperfect, mottled, wrinkled, wart-ridden Mu, as it is. Watching it closely like a cat watching a mouse, minute after minute after minute. And as we do this, we go deep into it. We get very intimate. Mu. I created this Mu. Where's the dividing line between it and me? Where is it? Now, if there's no dividing line, then what is this thing? What is its substance? What is it made of? When you ask this profoundly about Mu, you're asking, what am I made of? What is my mind made of? You are looking at your mind. What is its substance? Now this question has to become naturally, gradually, and it will. If you aim to go deeper into it, into an intimate place, which really means the very, very, very core of yourself, the very center of the center. I'm not saying the center of yourself, the center of the center. If you do that, it will become very urgent, naturally. I know I put that cell phone somewhere. Where is it? I gotta find it. Where is it? And you will get to the point where you're so close to it, it's so within your reach, that you don't care what's blocking you. You will knock that thing down and grab it with your whole strength. Doesn't matter if it's a big, burly Hell's Angel. The hell with it. I'm getting that thing. That's the attitude. Now, masters of old have talked about this at length. And I think I'll just read a little bit more. I know we're going a little bit long, but I'm just going to read here just to finish this off. So this is Master Poshan, who is a Chinese Zen master. And so I'll just read a little bit here. He said, when working on Zen, and let's just say when working on Mu, the important thing is to generate the Yi Qin. This is a Chinese word. It means doubt sensation. What is this doubt sensation? For instance, where did I come from before my birth? And where shall I go after my death? South of Shou, north of Tan. Where is that? What is it? Where did this all come from? What is its essence? What is it made of? This Mu, what is it made of? Since one does not know the answer to either question, a strong feeling of doubt arises in the mind. And then he tells you how to utilize this. Stick this doubt mass, and it becomes just like that. Stick this doubt mass onto your forehead and keep it there all the time until you can neither drive it away nor put it down, even if you want to. Then suddenly you will discover that the doubt mass has been crushed, that you have broken it into pieces. Okay. So the next time all of you come to Doksan, I want you to bring me this actual substance. Bring me the actual Mu, not your ideas, not that you figured out some kind of puzzle. Can you do that? We'll end there.